Hi, my name is Dr. Patricia Murugami. Welcome to your next best self. I know you might be wondering, who's this Dr. Patricia Murugami? Well, I'm a leadership catalyst, a leadership coach, an educator on matters to do with life, leadership, love, and legacy. And I hope that as you start to listen in and practice some of the leadership insights we'll be sharing here, you'll begin to see your next best self. Welcome back to your next best self podcast with me, Dr. Patricia Murugami. I want to thank you for all the feedback we've already received on the most recent podcast, where we talked about how to turn pain into purpose with Teresa Njoroge, the founder and chief executive of Clean Start Solutions. Today, I have the honor and joy of speaking to another colleague of ours, Sarah Odima, who is currently working at Clean Start as a program assistant in the Circles of Healing. She's a God-fearing lady and a lover of the things of God. She's also a trained coach, something we share with her, with 2 years' experience as a life coach. She studied theology with Kikuyu University, Maurice Cerullo's School of Ministry, Marriage School for Singles and Married, and also studied leadership and civic engagement, paralegal, and is currently pursuing a bachelor's degree in computer science. Sarah Odima, it's a great privilege to be having this conversation with you. I have seen firsthand the kind of work you're doing, which is life-giving work. And we felt it was important to have this conversation as part of this series. Sarah Odima, welcome. Who is Sarah Odima in her own words?
Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Patricia Murugami. I would start with a word of gratitude for giving us this opportunity to just share what we are doing. Sarah Odima, as you have just said, is a God-fearing woman. I love the Lord very much. I'm very passionate to see the life of women changed, women being empowered to stand on their own. This was basically developed even before I went to prison. I used to look at the way women were struggling in their marriages, struggling to put food on the table. And I opted, what can I do? What can I do to help this woman stand on her own, be able to speak out? Those are some of the things that were running in my mind at that time. And that's when I started a recruiting agency where I connected with some companies abroad to source jobs. So the first thing is I myself went to just check in this in the Middle East, what are these kind of jobs? What do they look like? And I felt it was a good opportunity to give to the women. So In the year 2016, I was still helping the women, but then the men, the parents to the men came and asked me, "You're doing a good job to the ladies. Why don't you try there to try and help our men as well?" And I was like, "Why not? You know, let's have a balance. Let's have some equality." And the first batch that I tried to help is what brought me. That brought me to being arrested and being taken to prison. So from there is when I realized, okay, I have not been called to work with the men. I've been called to work with the women. And when I was preparing everything for the men to travel, I don't know. Maybe it is different to handle the men and the men from the women, because when I was preparing everything for the men to go, there's a team of the men who came and they wanted me to apply for them for the jobs, but they were not authentic. They didn't tell me the truth about their background of everything. So two of the candidates were found to have been banned from traveling to Dubai, and they didn't tell me that part of information. So when I was applying for their traveling documents, the message that came back to me is that the visas have been canceled. And because it was the first thing I was doing for the men, it was the first thing, of course, there's always, sometimes you'll get those hitches. So when I was trying to get to know what exactly happened, why didn't you tell me this thing, and what could we do to ensure that these men get the jobs? The men could not wait. They took me to Nairobi Central Police, where I had to answer. I had to explain why the men did not travel and why the visas were cancelled. So with the corruption, the rate of corruption in our country, and you know me being a God-fearing woman, I tried to probe up the police and I was like, okay, fine. This is what happened. This is how things are. And I'm following it up and ensure that these men are well served. There was not really very much time to even explain myself or get justice, access justice to that, because the my colleague whom I was working with, when he was asked what happened, he said that, no, you asked Sarah, she has eaten the money. So I was like, no, I have the receipts, I have everything. And I don't know what transpired at the police station. There was a lot of malicious talking there, despite me standing and saying, I have the receipts, I have everything that proves that I've not taken these people's money, and my intentions were pure, and I wanted them to get a job. Did not really material. It did not really augur so well. So later on, I was bailed out with a cash bail. The police asked me for, the IO asked me for 80,000 shillings, but on the receipts he wrote 40,000 shillings. So when I came back and I was released, I was released from the cell. I sat and I was like, hey, this guy, he's given me a 40 shillings receipt. So what happened to the other 40? So I went back to him and I asked, you've receipted for me 40,000 shillings. So what about the other 40? So he looked at me and he was like, if you don't comply with us, if you do not agree with us, we will take your file to court. And I sat down and I was like, God, what is the best? You know, sometimes you sit down and you ask, what is the best way to go through this? And I felt in my heart, the right thing to do is fine, take me to court then. I'm going to explain myself to the court. Little did I know that if you don't know, there's some things if you don't know, you don't know. So I was taken to court. The IO wrote very, you know, things that I did not do, I'm not even aware of. And when they were being mentioned before court, because I had a lawyer, I was like, you know, those shock on me. I'm like, where did you come? Why is all these things? What are you talking about? So I didn't know much about law by then, like I know now. I didn't know my rights like I know now. I didn't know how to build the ground like I do know right now. So when it came to my time to answer to the judge, he called me and he said, Sarah, you have a case to answer. I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't even know what you have a case to answer means and what it looks like. So in the end of it, I was convicted and I went to Langata Maximum Women Prison, one of the largest correctional facility in Kenya. And when I went there is when the reality hit me that for sure I'm behind bars. I don't even understand why I'm here. But when I looked at those women, saw how they were struggling, saw people who are there, most of them due to poverty-related issues, most of them due to emotional issues, because maybe it was out of passion, you found your husband with another woman. So I looked at them and I said, okay, fine, I'm in this mess. I'm also suffering, I'm also struggling. I feel I've been convicted unfairly. So within 3 months, I was still in that denial. I was still denying that this is just a joke, I'm gonna come out. So I went and judged for an appeal, which of course I was denied bond. So I came back and I said, okay, Sarah, the reality is this. You might go home or you might not go home. So you have to prepare yourself either to stay longer or not to stay longer, because my conviction was a 3-year sentence. So I started preparing my mind that, Sarah, you're gonna take longer or you might take longer or you might go home. So I was prepared in both. So I sat and I told myself, so what am I gonna be doing while I'm still here? It's not an easy space. I feel it is unfair, but I also have women like me who are here. What can I do? So I remember one of the madams who came and looked at me and she asked me, Sarah, when I look at you, I'm also wondering, why are you here? So, you know, it becomes so difficult when even the madam whom you feel, maybe she feels I am here rightfully, is asking me, Sarah, why are you here? Because when I look at you, your mindset is totally different. So I looked at her and I told her, Madam, I don't also understand, but only God knows why I am here. So she looked at me and she told me, Sarah, you are a role model. That was after I'd served 3 months. So those words sank so deeply into my heart. And I was like, if I'm a role model, so what am I role modeling? And I'm in prison. And as I said, I'm a God-fearing woman. I resolved to go and seek God. And I asked God, God, I've just been told that I'm a role model. What exactly am I role modeling in such kind of an environment? In 1 week after that, I was given an opportunity to lead the women. I became a leader. So it was quite easy to maneuver around, you know, mingle around with the wardens and also mingle with the women because I became like a voice to them. So I remember there was one time that there was a search in our ward and a lady, you know, everybody came there. They were so afraid. You know me, I'm sitting there, I'm looking at them. Remember, my passion is to empower this woman. So this woman that I'm looking at to empower is so afraid. She doesn't know her fate. She doesn't know what is going to happen. I looked at the wardens and I remember lifting up my hands and I asked the warden, exactly why are you punishing everybody? What have we done? And you know, the warden looked at me and saw the courage and the way I was courageous to stand and ask, exactly why are you punishing everybody for what we don't know we have done? And the warden looked at me and he said, somebody has been found with a phone and you're in the same ward and this person has been making phone calls and you people want to tell me you're not aware. I looked at the warden and I told him, we are not aware because we don't know what time she makes the phone calls. And you know, there was that urgency and I would say pity. He looked at us with pity and he felt, yeah, you're making sense, Sarah. For sure, if the rest have not done anything wrong, why should everybody carry that burden? And we were told to go and write a one-page apology letter. And how do we want to move on? How do we want to move forward in the rest of the years that we are going to be serving? And to me, I really felt I had fought for someone. I felt that it was good that I didn't keep quiet. It was good that I didn't fear. It was good that I became a voice. And the letters came and one of the letters was like, if you go and you do a search and you get that this lady, the person whom you found the item from on her side, please tackle that particular lady. And I'm telling you, for the 1 year and 4 months that I served at Langata Women's Prison, it was smooth. And we were given a chance to speak out. How best do we solve the issue of illegal things in the prison? And one of it was like, please don't beat them. Let's do away with corporal punishment and give the women a chance to speak. Why was she found with a phone? Maybe it is a very genuine reason that she's making a phone call. So we were given that opportunity and we were told, so what should we do if we get a lady with a phone? And we were like, maybe just give her seclusion, set her aside, but don't beat this woman because she's already going through a lot. So that is how I came up, that is how my life was before and even while I was serving sentence.
Wow, Sarah. You know, listening to you, and first of all, there's a lot of power in your voice. Did you know that? And I want to say, listening to you has made me reconfirm that one person with courage makes a majority. One person with courage makes a majority. The fact that you are even seen as a role model when you are going through a season of turbulence, questioning, denial, says that that which is within us continues to show even when we are in the pit, in the darkness, in the tunnel, in the, you know, at the bottom of the mountain. So thank you so much for sharing that so authentically and so honestly. So Sarah, you spent 1 year, 4 months, and you've actually said it wasn't so bad. And I was like, what? It wasn't so bad. Could you share some lessons that you learned during that time and that you've continued to grow? And, you know, when you came out, how did you integrate? Because that's such an important experience and insight that I would love to know, and I know our audience would be very interested in appreciating the lessons you learned when you were serving that sentence and how you then came out and integrated your life, becoming a coach, and even now being part of the work at Kingstart of Circles of Healing.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Patricia. Lessons are amazing. The lessons that I learned when I was serving behind bars were just in another level. I don't think if I didn't go through that experience, I would be where I am today. So the first thing is that my relationship, I learned to relate well with people. People sometimes ask me, Sarah, how was it? You didn't fear sleeping next to criminals. I'm like, those people you call criminals are not criminals. It's only that things happen beyond their control. You know, maybe somebody slapped someone because maybe she was defending her marriage and that person died. Can we call that person a criminal? It was not intentional. She was not looking to kill somebody. We have a case of a lady who was defending her mother because the father had sold their land. And these people are like, no, we can't become landless. We can't become homeless. And the person who came who was taking the land from them, you know, they came with a stick and they tried to defend themselves and this person from hurting their mother. And the person, I don't know how it happened. They hit this person and the person died. Do you call that person a murderer? They are not. They were just defending what they felt was rightfully theirs. So I would say a bigger percentage of the people who are in prison are not intentional criminals. It's just that things happened. They found themselves in the mess. Maybe somebody like the petty offenders, somebody was hawking, and then the city council came and found them. Would you call that person a criminal? They were not criminals. They were just trying to fend for their children, you know? Or maybe somebody was a crime of passion. I found you with my husband. What was the way to do it? So amazing lessons that I learned. Number one, people who are behind bars, most of them are not criminals. It's only that things happened that they had no control over and they found themselves there. And because law has to take the direction it took, they found themselves with the label that they have been given. So that is the first lesson. People behind bars are not per se criminals. It's only that things happened beyond their control and they found themselves behind bars. The second thing that I learned, trauma. After all these things have taken place, there's normally a traumatic experience that this woman goes through, which of course I also went through. So I learned, if trauma is not transformed, if this trauma, because you know you're really juggling through so much. Imagine I was there, I'm still asking myself so many questions. So why am I here? The warden has also come and asked me, Sarah, why are you here? So you see the trauma is escalating. And if I do not give myself a moment to positively take what has happened to me, I'm going to transfer it. I'm going to transfer it, and it's not going to be in the best way. Whether it is when I'm still serving prison or when I have left prison. So this trauma has to be transformed. How? The way the trauma that I was going through was transformed is when Kleinstadt came to Langata Women Prison with a program called Spear. I was given a chance to basically journey inside myself, check myself, dig deep inside of me. Exactly how am I feeling with everything that has happened? And I feel rejected. I feel lost. I feel confused. I feel, you know, there were all those mixed emotions that were there. So the Spear gave me an opportunity to highlight all that I was feeling. How was my inner world? Then the next thing that it gave me was, so because I have identified what is going on with me and what has been happening, even from my childhood to where I am in prison. So what am I going to do differently that is not going to be destructive? And I knew I had to change my attitude. I had to change my mindset. I had to change my perspective of how I view the pain that I'm going through. The first thing, fine, I felt it was not fair. But what am I going to do way forward? So I told myself, Sarah, you're going to take responsibility. Take responsibility, whether you did it or you didn't, take responsibility for me. I'm going to love myself so much that I'm going to take responsibility of this pain. And how am I going to do it? I'm going to begin by forgiving myself. I'm going to deal with my emotions to ensure that they are not going to be destructive when I'm serving and post-imprisonment. And the third thing, I have a family, my siblings and the rest. When I leave prison, how do I want them to see me? I'm going to go back to the community. How do I want them to see me? So that was what the SPEAR program was all about. So if trauma is not transformed, it will be transferred. The cycle or the pattern of crimes will continue, and recidivism, which means your chances of going back to prison, will continue. So I looked at it and I said, so these are the steps I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to do it. And how will I do it? I wrote all those things down. So from there, I started helping the women. So I remember, like, there's a very young lady. She was 20, 21 years. She came to me and told me, Auntie, this is the nature of my case. And I also feel I'm unfairly behind, but I thought, okay, so tell me. So she explained to me how her case looks like and everything. By then, I had not even done paralegal. But you can imagine, I was able to look at the gaps through my experience. And I started seeing, these are the gaps. This is how you're going to build your ground. This is how it's going to be. Can you imagine, after helping that lady, she went before the judge with courage and she was released. So I used to help the women. They get released. I was still behind bars. But there was hope inside of me that one day I'm going to leave. So another thing that I saw, many women have been imprisoned because they did not know their rights. If I knew what I know today, I would have stood before the judge and told the judge, if the IO is saying A, B, C, and D, please give me the evidence. I didn't know I'm supposed to do that. So today I have learned that I need to know my rights as a woman. And these rights will help me build a strong ground, even when I'm standing before the judge in court. So that is basically what I use, and that was the reason why I did paralegal, so that I can understand, how does the law look like? What does it entail? How do I dress myself, and how do I address myself when I'm before court? So right now, of course, I'm released, but what about the women that we are serving? So I'm also giving them that a chance to know their rights, so that they are able to present themselves and build a strong ground of defense. The next lesson that I've learned, the reintegration process is very difficult. So through the coaching and the counseling and mentorship sessions, you will have challenges that are so immense. You know, despite you having a moment of being counseled, a moment of being mentored, or this, even the coaching, you realize that you'll still have challenges that sometimes are a bit hard to handle. I'll give an example of a lady that currently we are working with. She was like, Sarah, it's like I'm having a whole, it's like problems have come from every corner. They have all invited themselves and they are all upon me. I just don't know what to do. I feel so overwhelmed. I don't even know where my children are. And then she also had an act. You know, it's like problems are coming from every corner and you feel so overwhelmed. So I looked at her and I said, I understand you. Some things, some problems are more spiritual than physical. And you have to take a spiritual aspect. That's why we have the faith-based organization, so that we can be able to reach them, to reach out to them, and so that they are able to give us those services. So that is one lesson I'm learning, that there are challenges that are beyond us, and they need a higher authority to help us deal with them. The last but not the least, I'm also learning some of the lessons that we learned that also caused us to come up with the circles of healing, is that you need a space as a woman. You need a place where you not be judged, you will not be condemned, you will not be pointed fingers at, and you will not be rejected. So that's why we came up with the circles of healing, a space where a woman is able to express herself without fearing. And you're in a space where you know somebody can understand. When you talk about Mororo, they understand. If you talk about Kaba, they understand. If you talk about, I saw a word and I did this, marufuku, they understand, they are not going to judge you. So that is one of the things that I've come to learn, that we need a space where we'll not feel judged, we'll not feel condemned, but we'll be given a space to express ourselves. And just within that very group, find our solutions to what we are going through.
Sarah, what I love about what you're saying is the fact that the solutions are within us and around us. This year is my year of abundance, and I truly believe whatever we need is within us and around us. And by listening to you and how you have continued to pick those lessons and even transfer those lessons as you help people, you know, deal and process that trauma, proves to us that many times the solutions just need one person to catalyze, to start us off, and you're able to move forward. So I notice you have done a lot of leadership courses. You're a coach and you're continuing to do a lot in the circles of healing. As we get to the tail end of our conversation today, how do you continue to keep that light burning within you and to continue striving to become your next best self? And the reason I ask you this question is that I find that many of us, many people I meet, many clients I meet, many of the women and men in the networks that we do our breakthrough leadership transformation work are held captive. They are prisoners of their past. They are prisoners of their fears, and they are prisoners of their failures. And some of them never move forward. They are trapped there in those invisible prisons. They may as well be in committee, but I think the invisible ones are even more potent. They're even more powerful because you carry them with you wherever you are. So how have you, Sarah, continued to light that flame within you to continue becoming your next best self and putting that past behind and helping others, in other words, rising as you lift many others? How have you done that?
Yeah, thank you so much, Patricia. For sure, every challenge that we go through, we have the solution. You will never know that you carry gold inside of you unless you start the journey of discovering who you are. And that is what Ufunuo program that we are currently running at Clean Start with the women behind bars and the ones who have already left prison. That's what we are doing right now, so that you get a chance to know your inner world. Because if you do not understand that you're bitter, you're anger, or you do not understand that I'm struggling with something. Let me give an example of one of the things that allow me to call it lessons. You know, as we do the coaching, we also get to, you coach yourself. You know, as you listen to them, you also go like, okay, I'm also struggling with this and this and this through the life coaching. So why life coaching? I before it was coaching, then I realized I have an amazing experience that I have, things that I've gone through in life. And I was like, how can I use my life experiences? Because it is through the pain that I went through that has been turned to my purpose right now. And until you see it, you see your pain, until you see those confusing moments as being turned into purpose, then I would say that you've still been in that struggling space. So the first thing is you need to understand, like you've said it, that the biggest prison is within us, you becoming a prison, even not even the prison of being behind bars physically. So if you don't know exactly what is going on without inside of you, and you don't become intentional in solving it, I said I'm a spiritual person, but I've learned not to spiritualize what I need to deal with. If I'm struggling with unforgiveness, I need to take a paper, write down everybody that I feel offended me. It is not an easy thing to do, but it is the right thing to do. It is not easy to go and call somebody and tell them, I want to have a meeting with you. And it's very, very uncomfortable and very difficult. But sometimes we have to do these things because we love ourselves that much. I love me, and Sarah, you're going to be free. And I'm going to be intentional, and I'm going to take deliberate steps to ensure that I'm free. So in the Ufunuo program, there is there is a topic on forgiveness and reconciliation. So we need to understand, you need to know, when these things happened, what exactly took place? Am I still bitter? Am I still angry? And when I'm triggered, how do I normally react? Do I normally react or do I normally respond? So you need to have all those things. So these are the things, the way you react, when you react or when you respond, are the things that will guide you, will open your eyes to see, am I still in prison or am I free? So I would say if you're still in prison, if you're still struggling to forgive, that even if that person calls you, you switch off that phone or you block them. That's not the right way to go. That's not the right thing to do. That's not the society that we are desiring to live in. The best thing is to take the right initiatives. If you can, even call. I saw the women that we are training, taking an initiative. You know, there's something about, allow me to use the woman because I'm interacting now is when I'm starting to interact with men, but I've interacted more with women. Assumptions. Sometimes you assume that I think so-and-so doesn't love me. I think so-and-so has a beef with me. I think, you know, you're thinking, but you don't have evidence. So you become an enemy to yourself with no legal ground. Sometimes I love thinking on a legal ground. You don't have evidence of what you're thinking. So I normally ask somebody when they come to me with such kind of a question, so what evidence do you have that so-and-so doesn't love you? So take a step, call that person and move out from assumptions to it is true. And you've seen people calling, and when they call, somebody goes like, what are you talking about? I don't even remember you wronged me in any way. And even if that thing happened, it happened. You're human. We are human. You make mistakes. And the person goes like, my God, I've been in prison for 2 years. Then I've kept myself in another prison for another 5 or 6 or 10 years or 11 years. We've had such cases. So you're there, you can't move forward, you can't become productive, you can't interact, and it is through interacting and networking that you grow. So those are kinds of prisons. You have to get yourself out of those prisons by taking intentional measures. If you can't do it by yourself, look for a coach, look for a counselor, a mentor, and tell them sincerely, I'm struggling with this and this and this. Can you please help me? And I don't think there's anybody who will not agree to help you maneuver through. So the next thing is that I'm also writing a book, and the book is Do It Right. There's a scripture in the Bible that says the story of Cain. You know, Cain had a dialogue with God. Sometimes you think that God is so, you know, he cannot listen to us, he's not merciful. But we look at the story of Cain, they had a dialogue. Sometimes when you feel confused and you feel like you're lost, it's good to just sit down and tell God, God, you know what? I want us to talk. It is A, B, C, and D. So Cain had a dialogue with God and he felt, me, I'm feeling jealousy for my brother. And those are some of the prisons that you get ourselves in. And you see, if we do not deal with one thing, it will lead to another. It will continue to another, to another, to another. So he was struggling with jealousy with his brother. Why was his offering accepted and mine was not accepted? But the way he responded to that jealousy is what was wrong. And God tried to help him get out of that situation. What did God do? He told him, Cain, there is something that is bothering you, and if you do not deal with it, it will escalate to something much bigger that you cannot solve. And Cain did not even bother about it. Like most of the time, we go like, it will go. That combat feeling, it will go. You don't take intentional steps about it. That unforgiveness, that jealousy, that anything, it will just go by itself. But things do not work like that. We see what happened to Cain, that at the end of it all, he killed his brother. Was it intentional? No. It is the jealousy in him that led him to do that. So if you do not take those intentional steps and get that calm feeling inside first, deal with it, then from there, you'll have blocked that other step from taking place. So God comes to Cain and tells him, you know what, Cain? Why did you kill your brother? And he felt like, God, you're not fair to me. And God asked him a very simple question. If you do the right thing, will you not be accepted? That is the thing that led me to write this book. So what is this right thing? How does it look like? So if I don't know the right thing, will I even know what I'm supposed to do. So Cain did not know what was right. That is why he behaved the way he behaved. So I resolved to write this book so that I'll be able to reach to many. Do a research. What is this that is right? If you're not able to Google or do something, you can get the elderly people. They know what is right. People who have acquired knowledge, they know what is right. Ask from them. And another thing you've seen, I've done a lot of studies. I'm also doing a lot of learning, because that is the way you also get to know what is right. So those are the ways that I'm using to continue making a difference and to continue being relevant in our society.
Sarah, thank you so much. Do It Right. What an incredible title for the book. I can't wait for the book launch, because the idea of the written word, in addition to the verbal word that we've shared today in this conversation, will go much farther than sometimes anything else will ever do. And so I want to thank you very much for sharing with us your experience so authentically, being so clear. I loved what you said about don't spiritualize that which needs to be materially dealt with, you know? And that's a big risk for a lot of people who tend to be spiritual, that they disregard and are inauthentic when it comes to pain, trauma, and challenges they are facing. It is important to pray, but it's also equally important to find material support and ways of healing, because in a sense, God has really given us both the ability to have faith and actions. And those actions means we can hire a coach, get a mentor, go through a program. And I want to congratulate you, because Ufunuo continues to graduate many women. And I see that these are the women who are going out now, empowered, power from within, ready to take on the world. And even more importantly, to find ways to then be sustainable within their families and communities, also through the business hubs. So without further ado, I want to wish you the very, very best in the work that you're doing, in the projects that you're working at, in all the things that you're doing to help women become their next best selves, particularly these women who tend to feel invisible, they tend to feel unheard, and they tend to feel that their dignity has been stripped off. Sarah, never underestimate the power of your example, the power of your courage, and the power of your generosity of spirit to keep lifting many, even when it seems very difficult. That seed you're planting will continue to bring a bountiful harvest, all in due course. So well done, and thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Patricia. The pleasure is mine for hosting me today in this particular platform. It's an amazing moment.
Thank you so much, and may you continue to become your next best self.